All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now. We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo let you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there. All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes, or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another Thursday Q&A edition of the podcast. Some of y'all, if you're listening to this when it came out, might notice that this one's a tad bit late. That's unlike us to be a little bit late. Jacob, how you doing over there?
Doing good, doing good. Y'all don't know what we've gone through, but we're going to explain it here in a moment.
Yeah, it's been a whole deal, everybody.
Yeah. Would not wish on anybody. But anyway, yeah, doing good. We're just trying to ride up the storm that's about to roll through.
Yeah, so if you are a YouTube viewer who normally watches us on YouTube, maybe you're over here on Spotify or maybe you're on Apple Podcasts today because you couldn't find today's episode on YouTube. That is because we got a strike and are banned from YouTube for the next week. So we can't put anything on YouTube.
Yep.
So this coming Monday's episode will not be on YouTube, at least on Monday. We'll put it up eventually when they give us access to our account again. In the meantime, I'm going to try to put it on our Circle account. So everyone who's already on Circle, be looking for it. If you're not on Circle, go check it out. We'll link it in the description of this show. But yeah, we got a good old content strike from YouTube for reasons that I kind of don't even want to mention.
I don't even know.
I'm afraid they're going to strike us again.
Yeah, they're not.
All that we'll say about it is that it's a big load of BS.
Yes. Yeah. It's. Yeah, I wouldn't want to say it, but they.
No, I don't want to say it.
Yeah.
I'm literally
their
scared.
AI monitoring system's like, banned again.
Yes.
Ban hammer.
God. Yeah, dude, it's been terrible.
I'll say this. It's nothing that we've said. It's nothing that we've done. It's nothing that we've showed.
Nope.
But they found something somewhere.
Yep.
Or they presume to have found something somewhere that got us banned.
Yeah. After about almost a month of dealing with this, we finally figured out what the actual cause is. So hopefully we can avoid it now.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
It's a little hiatus from YouTube, but hey, appreciate everybody listening to the podcast, though.
Yep. So, going dark on YouTube for the next 7 days. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, but it's all good. Also, heads up for everybody, of course, that's listening to the show. We have our first live event this weekend in Birmingham, Alabama. Actually, it's Trussville, Alabama, just outside of Birmingham. We have a live event going on at Revive Outdoors, their new store in Trussville. And it's going to be this Saturday, 10 to 2. Past podcast guests are going to be there. Pablo Escobel, Jamie McKay, Scott Seals, and he hasn't been on the podcast, but he's going to be a future guest at some point if we can get around to it, Mr. Jake Booth.
Oh, yeah.
I almost said Jake Bush. Jake's another one. Hopefully we get on the podcast, but Jake Booth. There are going to be some of the guest speakers. We're going to do live Q&A. It's going to be a great time. Free food, soft drinks, all that kind of stuff are going to be present at the event. Come try out a bunch of different saddle equipment, everything, and just come out and hang out with us. But again, this Saturday, which is the 20th, June 20th, from 10 to 2 at the Revive Outdoor Store in Trussville, Alabama.
Yes. All right, let's get into some questions now. We got some video Q&As this week. First one is Dan Austin from Alabama. Subject is Does and a Fawn from the Larry Wyshoon podcast.
Good afternoon, Andrew, Jacob, rest of the circle guys. After listening to the podcast yesterday with Larry Wyshoon, it opened up some discussion that some of the guys at work and I have discussed in the past about managing properties and all. And one of them that has a lot of experience had told me in years past that given the health of a deer herd, that a doe can determine the sex of her fawn based upon what the deer herd needs. Like, example, my property has a lot of does on 50 acres. Of course, I'm in a prime location. I've got a lot of terrain features and funnels that kind of lead to that spot, so it sets up very nice. But I have seen that in the 6 years I've been on the property that a lot of the does drop twins. They have a good survival rate. And a lot of times, there'll be two buck fawns, or there'll be a buck and a doe fawn. And usually when they drop a single, it'll be a buck fawn. So I see a lot more buck fawns than I do doe fawns. And so I'm kind of curious, is that because there's so many does and they're trying to balance it out? But then I also heard what Larry said about that a drought year, a stress year, sometimes that they've noticed that based on that, a doe may drop more buck fawns based on survival rate. So I don't know. I'm just kind of curious how Clay, Chris Dugan, some of the older guys in the areas that they hunt, have they seen this in their observations and their sits over the years? And, you know, maybe even Sam, Casey, some of you guys have seen the same thing. But I'd just be kind of curious of the input from some of the other guys in the group if they have observed that also. But I have to head into work. I got to be there at 7. Sorry I'm going to miss everybody tonight. But that's my question. Thank you.
All right, Dan, appreciate the question. Dan is a Circle member. He was referencing some of our other Circle members on there, too. This would be a good discussion on there, I feel like. Need to open up a thread about it.
Yeah.
But what is your take?
I have no take. I would say revert back to a biologist. Maybe the next time we have a biologist on, ask them about maybe some research, like ahead of time, see if they can pull any research, even if it wasn't maybe with the university that they're associated with or organization they're associated with, and see what could be found. I'm not sure. I mean, again, Larry said exactly what he was talking about. During stressful years, drought years, seemed like there's more buck fawns being produced than a really wet years, tons abundance of browse, seems to be like a lot more doe fawns. But then he said also he's seen that not happen even during like really good years where they would assume there'd be a lot more doe fawns, still tons of buck fawns being produced, being born. So I don't know. It's an interesting question, but he's got a ton of deer on 50 acres, dude. That sounds awesome. Sounds like a really tart rich environment. Try to fill the freezer and also probably a pretty good rut spot as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I'd stick with the biologist. I don't know if we're really qualified to talk about that. It makes sense, though.
To be honest, I never even thought of that until Larry brought that up.
Yeah, me neither.
Like, I never thought of, like, what outlying factors could cause a doe to produce a buck fawn versus a doe fawn. So
I've heard that with coyotes, that when coyotes, their population gets knocked down, that they've got some biological switch where they can reproduce faster. So I don't know if that's the same with deer or not, but it would make sense because less doe fawns, the population is going to grow slower with less does on the landscape. So it makes sense. I don't know. Wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. All right, let's go on to Shane from Arkansas. Subject is whitetail hunt strategy when food is everywhere.
All right, guys, this is a piece of public in northwest Arkansas that I'm out scouting for this fall. My first time really on the property outside of driving around the access roads. My challenge here, it's timber, a little bit of undergrowth to it. But the whole area for 100 plus acres is a browse. Every tree in here almost is a white oak. So assuming we have a good mast this year, and even if it's an average mast, the whole area is a food plot. So how do you hunt it? Do you hunt the water sources? Bedding areas, trails leading from the bedding areas, scrapes. How do you play it?
Appreciate the question, Shane. Jacob, what's your take? You have a good take.
I was just joking about it while we were playing that, listening to it. I was like, you hunt it with a rifle in the furthest spot you can see through that stuff.
I mean, yeah.
But more specifically, there's probably going to still be areas, like we had on our hunters hangout last night. We had Joe, I think his last name is Lawrence. Joe, hopefully I said your last name right. I can't remember. I know it's Joe, last name starts with L. New deer hunter out in Mississippi. And he was talking about, like, that place is really thick. We actually broke that down as well. And we were talking a lot about last night. And we're all going to be following him real closely this fall. Really excited for him. Hopefully get his first deer in probably almost 30 years. But specifically, he was talking about the same thing, like it's abundantly thick, but his difference was there's a ridge and valley system, pines up top, hardwoods, oaks down the bottom. He said there's quite what he presumes is oaks. He's still trying to learn his tree species, but he's like, there's acorns still everywhere in those bottoms. So presumably there's a lot of red oaks and probably some white oaks mixed in there. The thing about like that, you're still, and even he was mentioned, there's, he mentioned a lot of places thick, but once we dissect it a little bit more and talk to him more about it, there's really a particular spot on his 160-acre family property that is considerably thicker than everything else, and presumably that's going to be some of your best bedding cover. Finding that on his place as well, on Shane's place, that there's going to be something that's a little bit thicker than everything else that's going to be a little bit better bedding, especially as you get into season. Early season, they could be bedded underneath some of those oak trees, especially a doe group. I mean, mm-hmm. bucks as well, just depending on how the cover lays out. But, I mean, hunting it, I would focus on trying to figure out the general area of the property that they're probably bedding in the most, and then also trying to find some of those trees that allow you to be able to get in there and be able to hunt as efficiently as possible. We were talking about this in a circle meeting last night, that you can easily overpressure a property, even 100 acres, 150 acres, depending on how your access is on mm-hmm. the place and how that plays such a big factor. If you're bumping a bunch of deer every single time you're going in there in order to try to hunt, you're going to educate a lot of deer. You know, specifically, if you're trying to kill a buck, and even more critical, if you're trying to kill a mature buck, the more you educate him, the harder it's probably going to get to kill him until it gets to the rut and maybe he loses some of his senses and you get an opportunity. So you just have to be really cautious about that and figure out what your best access is into the place. But if there's a bunch of oaks like that, I mean, you can hunt feed sign for sure. Just walk around and hunt feed sign. But my thought would be just wherever the best bedding cover is and kind of scouting in and around that to those trees close to that bedding cover that you could set up on and get in clean would probably be one of the best bets. And then also the great equalizer, aka burning some powder, gunpowder come gun season. That helps a ton. Absolutely.
Yeah, when he was asking the question, my brain pretty much immediately went to a couple different things. One, he said it's public ground, so how pressured is it? Where's the pressure coming from? That's number one. Number two, if there's that many oak trees there and you have a good mast year, a lot of guys don't like a heavy mast year because the deer maybe a little more scattered or whatever. And last year, I had two places that I mostly hunted. Both of them had a heavy mast year. One of them, there's oak trees literally everywhere, kind of like what he's talking about. It's nothing but oak trees. The other one is more of your pine country with SMZs. On the pine country side, where there's less oak trees, but they all produced, I had a great year. On the other place, I still saw deer. I saw bucks and everything, but I did not. A lot of the patterns from the year before were real messed up, and it was a little bit harder to narrow them down. So how I ended up on the place that's nothing but oaks, how I ended up narrowing them down was kind of like what you were saying. I just tried to find, one, the steeper slopes, the thicker areas, and whatever habitat edges were inside of that. So even though it's all oak trees, where was, like, the sparkleberry thickets? Like, one hillside might have a whole bunch of sparkleberries or saplings on it, and it's just different than everything else around it. And hitting those edges, walking those edges out, and that's how me and Zach ended up having a couple of really, really good hunts out there and seeing a whole bunch of deer, was just finding those edges. So even though it looks monotonous, there's probably something in there that's a little bit different than everything else. So that's something that you can go and focus on to hopefully find some deer. But I like areas where there's an abundance of food like that. Yeah. Also, he said it's about a 100-acre parcel that's nothing but oaks. What does the outside of that 100 acres look like? Like, I don't know if it's 100 acres of public, like it's just one chunk, or if it's just a 100-acre area that he's looking at. But I would go look at the edges of whatever that 100 acres is and see if, does it transition over to pines? Does it transition over into some kind of cut or anything else? And just look for your edges. I wouldn't really be that concerned with water.
No.
Unless you're in a severe, 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 severe drought, which I don't know about Arkansas, but in Alabama, we've been in a drought. I think we're getting out of it because we're about to get absolutely wrecked by a storm right now. Mm. And it's been raining like every single day.
Yeah.
So water's just not really a huge factor in there. So if you can find places where trees have fallen, where there's some storm damage, that's good. But anything that's different, terrain that's different, if it's mostly flat and there's like one ravine that goes through it, go check that out. Literally any kind of habitat edge or terrain edge I would go look at.
Yeah. And we talked to, I don't know which biologist it was, but they said that like deer consume, I forgot what the percentage is, but it's a pretty high percentage of their water through their feed that they're eating.
Yeah.
Yes, they still need water, but they get a lot of their water, a lot of their fluid from the vegetation that they eat, especially in the summertime. So, yeah, I wouldn't be so worried about water anyways, but It sounds like a good area. I mean, it really does. It's just trying to expand upon where you're seeing deer, where you're bumping deer, and really a lot of lessons learned. The best teacher is not a camera or anything. It's you actually sitting in the stand or walking and figuring out what's working, what's not working. Am I blowing deer out every single time when I go in here? Am I seeing deer? Am I not seeing deer? Ask yourself why for all those circumstances and then try to figure out why you're there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Sounds like a good area, yep. Man. Just walk it out this summer. Walk it. Get in there and check it out. All right, let's hit some stuff from the circle. I'm just going through some posts, some questions that people have been asking on the circle lately. Mm-hmm. Here's a good one from Mason about early season camo and just clothing for early season hunts or summer scouting. I think it's pretty relevant right now. But he said, what are y'all rocking to the deer stand when it's September and it's 90 degrees? Any recommendations for early season gear? I wanted to bring this up because one, there's some pretty good tips in here about staying cool. But what I was going to say is there's a lot of talk about merino wool, synthetics, and we have merino wool. We've used merino wool for a long time.
I'm a big synthetic guy.
Yeah.
I sweat a ton. Give me the synthetic, but I don't know where you're going with that.
Well, I was going to say that I like the merino when it's actually cold outside. I don't like merino when it's above like 75 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. It's just, it gets wet and it takes a long time to dry out. It will dry out and it will wick moisture. But if you're like, if it's 90 degrees and you're sweating and you get drenched, you're going to be wet for a long time.
It keeps you cool,
but I just don't like being wet.
Yeah, but also the cooling aspect is the evaporation of sweat. It's not just being sweat, because like if you're really sweating, it's high humidity and it's not evaporating off you, it's miserable.
Exactly.
So like that's one reason why I like synthetics. Plus, I like even synthetics as a base layer. Now, bottom's a little bit different, but for a top, even when it is cold, because I sweat going into the woods and I don't want to be wet when I'm starting to layer in the tree. I want to dry out as quick as possible. And the synthetic really does that. But yeah, synthetic's huge. Like for me, it's the those Mossy Oak Tibby pants.
Yes.
And the Tibby either long sleeve shirt or the hoodie dries extremely fast. And like the pants feel like air conditioning on my legs.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that. That's why we're doing all turkey season and also early bow season last year. But from a scouting standpoint, I'm not worried about scouting. Mm-hmm. To me, like if I'm going to sweat while I'm scouting, that's fine. You know, maybe something a little bit heavier, of a pant, scouting, you know, busting through a bunch of brush or whatever, looking around. But from a hunting standpoint, I like really lightweight synthetic clothing most of the time if it's hot.
Yeah, that Tibby's really awesome. And the reason I like having both is because some of the areas that I hunt where I got to walk in really far, this is what I did with Zach last year mm-hmm. when it was like, cold. It was cold when we were hunting this area.
What is cold for you? Like all of our northern guys can make.
Okay,
fun of you.
Yeah. It was low 20s. That is cold in Alabama. I don't care what y'all northern guys say. It's cold. Okay, so it was really cold, especially for us southern boys. Got thin blood down here, but you have to walk so far. It's strenuous getting in there. So you're gonna sweat either way. So I would wear. On those particular hunts, I would wear like more almost an early season kind of deal walking in, where I would maybe bring some bibs with me, but my pants and my shirt would be something lightweight like that Tibby, and I would just be cold for the first 100 yards, but you warm up pretty quick. And then by the time I got to where I was going, I would be wet. And then I would just take off that synthetic, and then I'd put the merino on. So I'd have my merino, the Mossy Oak Woodsman merino wool. Love it. Used it all last year. I'd have that in my backpack, take off the synthetic, put on the dry merino, and then I'd be toasty warm for the whole time. And I wouldn't sit there and like try to dry off or anything like that or like cool down. I would just immediately take that off, and I might get a little bit of the sweat off of me, but then I'll just put that merino straight on over it, and that kept me very warm. But all that to say, I don't like to wear the merino when it's super, super hot outside.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to give you a side note. We are now under a flash flood warning.
Uh-oh. Our boat's going to sink, guys.
Yeah.
we got to go get our boat here in a minute. Little old John boat, that bilge pump ain't working good enough.
No, it's not. You're just going to sit out there in a rain suit.
Yeah, that's what I did the other day.
Bailing.
I walked down there to the water, and that boat was full of water, son.
Yep.
Anyways, the other reason I wanted to bring up this particular thread is because Chris Jones had a hot tip in here that I'm going to have to try this.
Hot tip or a cool tip?
A cool tip.
Stay cool out there.
He just said that he likes to wear just Academy brand long sleeve lightweight camo with matching pants, which that's another thing I said on this thread on Circle was I was like, man, when it comes to synthetics, don't overthink it. You ain't got to spend $150 on a synthetic shirt. A lot of those just athletic material type stuff, it works great. But what he said is he'll take a 1 gallon Ziploc 3/4 full of ice, and he'll put it in the waterproof portion of his backpack with 2 or 3 bandanas soaking in it to switch out and wrap them around his neck. I'm like, that sounds nice, dude. I'm going to have to try that. So you literally just have bandanas soaking in ice water.
See, right,
around your neck.
What I was thinking is he's putting that bag of ice in some ice water, like in your hydration bladder sleeve in a backpack, and having that cool spot on your back walking in is where I thought he was getting at. Which actually, you'd be able to do both doing that way.
Yeah, and you just get that cold water, and that cold water runs down the back of your neck on a hot day. Ooh, dude, give me that. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good tip right there, boys. I think that's a good tip. All right, let's find some other questions on here real quick. All right, here's a question from Mike. Again, this is from Circle. Woodsmanship, how do you define it? What do you think? How do you define woodsmanship?
Well, my traditional way of describing it, woodsmanship, is not only knowing the habitat and terrain, vegetation types, like just being well, like have a lot of knowledge of your area, but also be able to move through the woods efficiently and effectively and quietly to get in and out of a spot. That's one aspect of it. Also, I think woodsmanship is kind of like the whole idea between knowledge and wisdom, which we talked about on a recent episode we recorded that come out a little bit later. But knowledge, you can get knowledge from a podcast, okay? The knowledge from the podcast doesn't necessarily make you a better woodsman, but teaches you things that you can then go and apply. And I think the applied knowledge, applied things you learn actually to use in the field builds woodsmanship and builds wisdom. So.
Yep. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the best ways is when we talked to Mike Pentecost, the way that he defined it was just being able to observe everything around you and like the perception of what's going on in the woods. And we're big on, we mentioned woodsmanship so much, and the kind of the origin of that is when I was growing up, my mentor, Ben George, he's been on the podcast a couple times, he would always say that the best compliment a hunter can receive is to be called a woodsman. Mm-hmm. Like the people who really know what they're doing, those are your woodsmen. And I think that's what it is. Like people who are just, they're generalists. They understand the woods. Like they can go out and they can shoot a limit of squirrels, or they can kill a nice buck, or whatever the case may be.
You know, it's like a hot take that I forget who wrote. Maybe we covered it last week, 2 weeks ago on a Thursday episode. Being a good woodsman does not equal you killing big deer. And I do believe that is true. Mm-hmm. I think it will lend yourself to having more opportunities just at deer in general, and maybe even mature bucks, but it doesn't make it where like having being a great woodsman automatically equals big deer. Because you might not live in an area that has big deer. There's factors there. And like we had mentioned during that hot take, like there's guys I've met who kill big deer pretty much every season, like top tier bucks for their area of the state that they're in, who I wouldn't really call them great woodsmen.
One thing we talk about with almost every guest on this show is map scouting. My favorite map scouting tool is LiDAR. If you're unfamiliar, LiDAR is basically like a 3D scan of the Earth's surface. I like to say it kind of takes away all the surprises. LiDAR is now available on OnX Hunt on their topography map. If you go to your app right now, click on the topography map, you can flip on that LiDAR feature and boom, it's gonna come on and you're gonna see what I'm talking about. The LiDAR is gonna allow you to see things that are normally hidden from view. This might be ditches, bends in creeks, rocks, old roadbeds. I personally love old roadbeds because deer like to walk them. They're great places to find scrapes. They're great camera locations. And you know, before, an old roadbed or an old logging road might be something that you kind of happen upon while you're out scouting or hunting. Well, now with the LiDAR, before I go into an area, I can turn on that LiDAR and I can see exactly where those roadbeds are. Even old logging roads from the 1930s, you can still see them on there. So that allows me to go straight to those spots and check them out. It's just an incredibly helpful tool, and it's available now on OnX Hunt. And hey, if you want to get 20% off your Onyx Elite membership, you can use the promo code Southern. Like I said, it's going to save you 20%. Go check out that LiDAR feature. You'll be glad you did. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt.
If you're traveling to hunt this fall, you need to check out Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone to rent an RV or a camper without owning one. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I wish I knew about this sooner. There's been a couple hunts over these last few years where, you know, depending on where you're going to hunt, there might not be good hotel options. There might not be good rental house options. So, I mean, this is perfect for the traveling hunter. They've got thousands of RVs and campers nationwide available right in your neighborhood. You got multiple ways that you can travel. You can drive it yourself, you can tow it, or you can have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. Outdoorsy also has built-in peace of mind. They've got comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance included. So not only is this a good option to give you a good place to stay even when you're going somewhere pretty remote to go hunting, but it's also often more affordable than hotels, especially if you got a good group of guys going with you. So how it works is you just search and choose an RV that fits your trip and your group size, you book it with confidence, and then you hit the road, whether you're driving, towing, or getting it delivered. And right now, listeners of the Southern Outdoorsman podcast can have all service fees removed from their booking in 2026 with show code OUTDOORSMAN at outdoorsy.com. That's OUTDOORSY.com, and use the code OUTDOORSMAN at checkout to remove all service fees.
But they just understand enough of their area and they're patient.
Yep.
There's like a sense of patience with them, and you know, they use technology, maybe like cell cameras and stuff like that, to tell them when they need to go hunt a spot, they set up, they kill a deer and be done with it. But again, they don't necessarily correlate killing big deer and being a woodsman. All comes down to like where you're at.
Yeah. All right. We're going to do one more. This is going to be kind of a short one because we're short on time. This has been quite an
experience. We got to talk about one fiasco.
We are. This is a good one to talk about right now, though, because a lot of guys are dealing with this. Mm-hmm. This again from the Circle. This is Brandon Meacham. I'm not going to read the whole thing because he had a long post. There's a ton of replies on it. But basically, the subject is using fawns to pinpoint your peak rut dates where you're at. So right now, in some areas, depending on when your rut is, some guys are starting to see fawns this time of year. And the theory is that, and we've talked about this on the show a little bit, is that you can see that brand new fawn when it's brand new and it was just born, it's just starting to walk, and you can kind of guesstimate when that fawn was conceived based on the gestation time of the doe. Mm-hmm. And so that gives you a peak rut date. And Brandon had a really interesting observation on here where he's been getting a couple different fawns on camera these last 2 or 3 weeks, and that they seem to be different ages, but they're with different doe groups. So he's like 3 different doe groups. And based on the dates, I think that he said one of them, he thinks that the fawn was probably conceived around the 25th of October. The next group, he thought it was around November 3rd. And then the third group, he thought it was around November 9th. And that's just an interesting subject, because if you can pinpoint that, you can say, hey, these does that live on this little ridge system and they hang out here, one of them is coming into heat on October 25th. Like, you need to be there. It kind of ties in with the annual patterns thing that we did with Daniel Williams a couple years ago, of just nailing down that peak. Like, when is that doe coming
in? You know who's the first person we talked to that talked about that? Shane Parker.
Yes.
We did like almost not a whole episode, but it was a long portion of an episode, maybe back in 22, some time frame around there, where he does that, because I think it's a 200-day gestation period.
Yeah.
And learning different doe groups, because not all does come into heat at the same time. It's a bell curve. Some a little bit earlier, some come right at peak, and then some are a little bit later in the season or a little bit later in the rut. And if you can learn some of your doe groups on the place, and by using that kind of information, which is kind of hard to do. I mean, you either have to have a lot of trail cameras that are really well placed. Like Shane talked about his strategy, putting trail cameras in and around what he perceived as like good fawning cover.
Yes.
To try to catch does with really young fawns. And then guesstimating by how big the fawn is when he finally gets it on camera, you know, the size of it, how well is it walking, all that kind of stuff, to kind of have an idea of, is it a week old? Is it a couple days old? Is it 2 weeks old? And then add your 200 days to it to figure out that rough time period. But I think it could be really effective if you use something like that. I'll tell you something that would be really effective. I know, listen, we're not the biggest fan of thermal drones. Thermal drones are cool. as long as you use them correctly. But I think from a deer survey standpoint, mm-hmm. using thermal drones, like in the summertime to kind of find, you could find your doe fawns, probably get tore up alive for this, but that's fine. But find your does with those fawns and actually locate them that way and figure out when you had the mass. It might be hard. I don't know. It might be hard to find a fawn with a thermal drone. Maybe you could, maybe you couldn't. But just somewhere where you can figure out when those does are dropping those fawns and, again, backdating them could be really effective for hunting and find out those areas that you need to kind of focus on. So, yeah, that's a really interesting point. And also, it's one of those things that you can kind of do if you just have cameras out, or if you're walking around and you jump a fawn or you find a fawn, you know, like you're checking food plots and there's a fawn laid out in that grown-up food plot, just having a general idea. You know, even if you found a couple fawns a year like that,
mm-hmm.
just kind of give you a better idea of that window of time. You know, that's never – it's not a disadvantage by any means. I mean, heck, it could help you for real.
Yeah, because the does come into heat at pretty much the same time every year. Within, I mean, a couple days, like less than a week, a doe will come into heat roughly that same day every year. And there's a couple of different guys who do this same exact thing, but they do it in different ways. So like Shane Parker was talking about backdating the fawns. Like you said, if you find a fawn, right, like if you're out scouting right now and you find a fawn laid up in the grass and it's just sitting there, like that is a fresh fawn. When they're not even really like up and walking around yet. So you can get a really accurate date with that. When they're up and walking around, it's a little bit less accurate. But that method does work. Also, Wes Moe's talked about it, where he's not using fawns, but he's like, if he has a buck chasing a doe on a certain day, he's first of all not going to shoot the doe. And second of all, he's gonna try to hunt that same area on the same day the following year. Because, again, she should come into heat that same day.
As long as you don't get killed.
Yeah. That's why Wes has, he's got buck spots, he's got doe spots. He don't shoot his does in his buck spots. So there's that. And then, of course, Daniel Williams with the annual patterns, where on your cameras, if, again, same thing. If you're getting a lot of camera activity, if you're getting bucks daylight in one spot for like 1 week of the year, that annual pattern can be used for years and years to come, because those does are going to come in roughly the same time every year. And we did talk to some people who seems like that annual pattern got kind of screwed up with the huge swing in the mast crop these last 2 years. So, you know, there's some play in it. It doesn't always work, but it does work pretty effectively when you use it. Like, we've ran cameras in some places where it's been very accurate the same week of the year. There was one spot that we hunted. I think we hunted it 3 years in a row. It's where you killed those two bucks that one time,
mm-hmm.
that area. I mean, it was like dead that 1 week. It was the same for like 3 years. And then I think it might have been year four was the year that we had that really, really bad drought and no mast. And then I went and hunted it all week that week, and it was rough.
Yeah, it's not like the deer didn't come into heat. They just weren't there.
Yeah, they
were. Because I was on another ridge system,
yep.
on the last day of the hunt when I was able to get out there, and it was awesome.
Yep.
Bucks everywhere.
Yep.
Does getting chased by bucks. Couldn't shoot one. Passed a really nice young two-year-old seven-point.
Yeah.
That was tempting. I was like, gosh, why can't you be a little bit bigger, man?
Just a little bit bigger.
Yeah, but
that's just a good thing to pay attention to, yep. right now, especially as you're planning your fall, too, because if you see a fawn, you can try to use that backdating tactic, whether you get them on camera, whether you find them, or if you have trail camera data from last year, or just in-the-stand observations, you can start thinking about that, thinking for this coming year of, like, where do I need to focus the most time, you know? So I think that's a great one, man. Right? A lot of good discussions happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what's this fiasco we got to talk about?
We planted a dove field.
Oh, yes.
Did you really not know what fiasco I was going
to
talk about?
I thought you were going back to the YouTube problem.
No.
Okay.
No, we done share that. No, we went planted a dove field. Whitetail Hill sent us some their dove plot mix, their sorghum and millet mix. Which we're going to test because it's supposed to be, and we talked about a little bit on an episode that we recorded with Caleb from Whitetail Hill. It comes out a little bit later. But talking about that blend, it's selected for being planted around high deer numbers where the deer aren't going to wipe it out before it matures. So we're going to test that because there's some deer on Kyle's property. But anyways, playing at Kyle's property. Our buddy Kyle Side has been on the podcast a few different times. Playing on his place, get the tractor and everything set up. And we were supposed to be there at like 3 o'clock, okay? And this was on, was this Monday? It was Monday.
Yeah, it was Monday.
And I'm thinking, like, you know, we got all the big equipment. 7-acre field. It's a really good-sized field. But I'm like, this ain't going to be that bad. You know, we got a big...
yeah, he's got all the equipment. He got big, a tractor, a tiller.
Big spread. Tiller. Not like a disc, but like a big mechanical tiller. Anyways, so with the cultipacker on the back of it, big spreader, all that kind of stuff. It ain't going to be bad. We get out there, dude. And it's like, if it could have gone wrong, it went wrong. We talked about this on the circle meeting last night. He's like, was there a bunch of hydraulic fluid in the mix of everything? I'm like, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because
we left a lot of hydraulic fluid in that field.
Yeah. I was going to say, probably a dead spot. I bet you nothing grows right there where that hydraulic fluid leaked out.
That was bad.
But I was telling the guys about it last night, and they thought it was so funny because I was like, kind of jump ahead a little bit. We started, got there about 3:45, 4 o'clock. We did not finish, and we're heading home until 1:15, 1:30.
Yeah, no, we left about 1:30.
Yeah, 1:30, 1:30. Anyways, something like that in the morning.
A.M.
A.M. It was, whew, dude.
All right, so the first thing that went wrong was like, so we had, y'all had to go pick up the tractor. We all got there, and the whole field is larger than 7 acres, and it's in like some kind of crabgrass. It's a cattle pasture is what it is. And Kyle marked off 7 acres, which is the amount of seed that we got. Mm-hmm. And we were planting like an L-shaped field, basically around the fence row. And it runs down the fence row, hits the tree line, and then turns down the tree line. So great shape for a dove hunt. You can hunt a lot of people on this thing. Mm-hmm. So we get there, and he had brush hogged it the week before. We didn't have time to spray it and burn it and all that. So he just brush hogged it. Well, there's a lot of chaff out in the field, just like dead grass from that brush hog. And he's like, I'm afraid that's going to gum up the tiller. So he brought a big riding lawnmower out there. He's like, let's just run over this chaff and just spread it out so it's not in big clumps all over the place. So I was like, okay, I'll do that while y'all go pick up the tractor. So I go out there and I'm running all over the place, running that stuff over. And he had burned some of it. And dude, I'm telling you, when I ran over those little burn spots in that riding lawnmower, it looked like a bomb went off. It was just like black smoke just everywhere. Cosmos. It was getting it. Dude, it got everywhere. It was in my eyes. Yeah, I was breathing it. I was eating it.
Yeah, you need a respirator.
It was bad.
Well, we go get the tractor. I don't tell my side. We go get the tractor.
Well, and y'all were gone for forever. I got almost the whole field done before y'all got back.
That's good. Because, yeah, we had to drive the tractor a long way. So we weren't trailering. We were driving quite a while from Peyton's place.
Oh, you didn't trailer it?
No. You didn't see Kyle drive up separately from?
No, I did not. So I saw y'all pull up, and I was like, finally, there they are. And then I saw y'all pull up. I pulled up
15 minutes before he got there.
See, I didn't realize that because I was running over everything. I was like, let me just finish up so I can get over there and help them out. So I look over after a while, and I see the spreader and the tiller on the trailer, and I'm like, where's the tractor? I'm like, did they unload it and put it somewhere? Like, I thought y'all stopped at the road or something. And I was like, where is the freaking tractor? Could they not get the tractor? And then after a while, I saw the tractor. I just looked up. I'm like, oh, there it is. I didn't know you had to drive it.
Yeah, like 8 miles.
Oh, wow.
15 miles an hour, traffic, caution lights on. had to go put fuel in it. Anyway, that was all good. But we get back over there. And I find it funny now. But we get the implement hooked up. We're going to get the implement hooked up. This is the biggest tiller. It's not a disc. It's a giant tiller. With, again, the cultipacker on the back of it. It's like the monster version of, like, the, I think they call them, like, the Furminators, like, one of the brands.
Yeah.
Guys use behind side-by-side small tractors. This thing's huge.
Mm-hmm.
Huge. Like, someone was talking about, like, oh, you couldn't pick it up. I'm like, dude, if this thing fell on your leg, you would not, it would sever your leg. That's yeah. how heavy this yeah. thing was, okay?
Yep.
Like, it's not like it break your leg. It would sever your leg.
Fast forward, we did try to pick it up. Did not work.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I knew that. I'm looking at how thick the steel is on that thing. I'm like, phew. Anyway, long story short, we hooked it up, 3-point attachment on the back of the tractor, and we couldn't get it raised up high enough. Like, it wouldn't clear the ground to be able to make turns and everything. And we fought that thing for hours.
Yep.
Messing with it. Like, thinking, oh, man, we can take off this, unbolt it. And anyways, take it apart. Finally, Peyton gets there. We've been there for, I don't know, it's probably 6:30 by the time Peyton gets there.
Which, by the way, I knew we were in for a rodeo. Yeah. When we had been messing with that thing for probably about an hour, and we got swarmed by termites that were biting us, which was great. Oh, yeah, you got bites all over you.
Dude, I'm tore slap up, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know termites bit, and they were...
So in the middle of getting swarmed by biting termites, we'd been messing with it for like an hour and a half. Every time we try to lift this thing up, hydraulic fluid just sprays out.
Yeah.
It was not good. And then Kyle's standing there, and we were all just sitting there looking at it. He's like, did y'all bring flashlights? We were like, no.
No.
And we're still like 2 hours from dark. I was like, oh boy, we're in for it now.
Yep.
So Peyton showed up.
Peyton showed up, got everything after 30, 40 minutes, finally got everything operating correctly where we could actually pick that piece of equipment up. And anyways, just started tilling up the field. So I did that. We went and grabbed a pizza, came back, and it's starting to get dark. Peyton's still out there tilling. He's done maybe a third of the field, something like that, maybe, if that. No, probably maybe a third. Quarter, third of the whole 7 acres. And
by the time we got back with the pizza, he was almost halfway done.
Yeah. So we finally, Kyle jumps on the tractor. Peyton had the lead. Kyle jumps on the tractor, started tilling. We're sitting there with our, sitting on our hands about, pretty much just sitting in the truck. Kyle calls him, man, you guys want to, he's like, y'all can leave if y'all want. He's like, I'll handle it. I'm like, no, dude, we're here for it. Dude, he tilled and finally we rotated out. He's like, man, I gotta go get my other tractor because we gotta
start spreading.
Spreading before the rain hits because all this rain's coming this whole week. Rain for like 10 days in a row. And he's like, why don't y'all want to hop on the tractor and start tilling? And the other one come with me, go grab my other tractor and get the spreader hooked up to it. I'm like, yeah, I'll run the tractor. It's been about 15 years since I've been on a tractor, but it ain't that bad. Got on there a little tutorial, back at it. I was like, oh, this is nice.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I was just telling y'all were gone. Maybe for a while, but I knew y'all probably be gone for a little while trying to get everything loaded up. And everything's going good. And this is the funniest thing. So I want to tell my side of this, and then we'll get to your side. So I'm tilling. I see y'all come back with the tractor. I'm like, all right, cool. I see y'all unload the tractor as I'm doing my loops. And I see the headlights on the tractor. And, dude, it felt like, I'm like, man, I made like 7 more passes on this field. And I'm like, I called Kyle. He didn't answer. Called you. I was like, hey, how's it going? And you're like, not good. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm trying to get the spreader hooked up. It's not going good. I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to keep tilling. And then, dude, 20 minutes goes by. I'm getting down to like the last few passes of the field. And I like look, and I just see like these two lights out in the field. And I could tell y'all were walking all the way down the field. I'm like, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. And I come back through, finish my passes. And again, I just keep seeing y'all walk in the field. I'm like, what are they doing? Finally pull up in a park at the corner of the L, and y'all are out in the shorter end of the L, like the bottom of the L, walking back and forth, and I finally could see with your light that y'all were hand spreading. And I was like, you're kidding me, dude. you're freaking kidding me. At this point, it's 11:30, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably 11:30 at night.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, dude, this is gonna be rough. So I hop off and y'all are just walking back and forth, go get some buckets of seed and all that kind of stuff. I was like, oh, this is not gonna be fun.
No, so we went and we picked up his tractor. We drove to his house, got his small tractor, and we had a spreader we were gonna put on the back of it, but the PTO arm was too short for that particular spreader, so we couldn't get it hooked up on the tractor. And we looked and we tried to find a solution, couldn't find a solution. And so, like, we were searching, and then eventually Kyle's like, man, we might have to hand spread this. I'm like, well, let's start, because that's going to take a long time. So we went and found his hand spreader, and yeah, that's a Onyx tracker came in clutch there, because we were doing it in the dark.
Well, hold on.
Couldn't see anything.
Let me tell you something. I hop out of the tractor, and I'm like, this would be a good ad for Onyx using the tracker, and you're like, oh!
Well, thankfully, we'd only made about one pass.
Listen, and I was like, I don't know why you think of that. Anyways, you finally did it, which was great. But I thought it was hilarious y'all were trying to do it without the tracker, because you can't see how many. We didn't have flashlights. We were using our phone light, okay?
Yeah.
And come to find out, I thought you were the tech guy. I didn't know how to turn your brightness up on your phone, on your flashlight, to make it a beam.
I didn't know how to narrow it.
And I was like,
learn something every day.
I was like, your flashlight's so dim. And I'm like, let me see it for a second and adjust it. You're like, oh my gosh. I'm like, a 5-year-old and Jacob, 30-year-old, teach me something new about technology. I'm like, I'm telling you, dude.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But yeah, it was like whoever was operating the spreader, hand seeder, they're out front. It was you for some of it, standing behind with the phone with Onyx tracker on, so you can see your lines, make sure we got good coverage. And a flashlight, because the front guy, Kyle had a headlamp, but we didn't have a headlamp. So if it was you and me running the spreader, there's nobody, whoever's running the spreader didn't have any light. So you're just like picking out something in the dark.
Yeah, seeing a tree up against the night sky and trying to walk straight to it. Because that first pass, I spread first. And on the first pass, we didn't have the spreader set right. So we used up all that entire thing of seed like real quick. So I made one on the 3-acre part of the field. I made one pass all the way down, and then I got about halfway back before it ran out. And I was like, oh, I don't know if we have enough seed. And then we started messing with it. We got it dialed in. But also I got like way off track. And so we were trying to mark where we were at with like the bucket. And we also found out that the spreader wasn't spreading anything out of the right side. It only kind of spread to the left. And so we had to work that in too. But I did the first pass, and then we got everything settled to where it's supposed to be. Kyle did the second one, you did the third one, and then I did the fourth one. We had 4 buckets of seed. And that was an experience. I was like, it was funny. Me and Kyle, it comes a point where all you can do is kind of laugh about it. And Kyle, we're laughing, just walking, sweating in the middle of the night with his hand spreader, like, meow, 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 meow. We're walking up and down this field in the dark. And Kyle's like, I just want to kill a dove. That's all I want, is just to kill a dove. I'm like, dude, this dove field better be awesome. I've never worked so hard on a field ever.
Yep. Yeah. Fun experience. But anyway, we got done really late. I came home. I was so nasty.
Yeah. I was covered in seeds and dirt and sweat and dead termites
and bite marks. I got bite marks all over me, dude. All slap over me, freaking tearing us up. But I didn't get to bed till like 3 a.m. and I was like, this is rough, dude. And I was like, woke up next day. We're like, oh, we need to hunters hangout. I'm like, there's no way, no way.
Oh yeah, yeah. So that's one of the reasons that everything is late this week. So we didn't do our normal hunters hangout Tuesday night because we were dead to the world.
Yeah, I did it Wednesday night.
And then we woke up Wednesday morning to the YouTube strike and all that. So we had to deal with that. It was hours of dealing with YouTube and trying to figure it out. But I think we got it figured out.
Yep.
I think so, we're going to be okay.
Other than that, we need to wrap this up so we can go save a boat before it sinks to the bottom of the lake.
This is one of those weeks.
Yeah, appreciate everybody listening to the show.
Hey, we got to give Emery a shout out.
All right, guys, if you enjoyed the podcast, okay, and maybe you want to spice things up and add something else to your listening or watching experience, you need to check out our buddy, Jacob Emery, DO3 Outdoors, on YouTube, and listen to his podcast or watch his podcast. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, but it's also on YouTube. There's a video show, but it's DO3 Outdoors, and just check it out. He just launched his new season of the show, and he does a really good job with it. He's been a guest on the podcast a few different times, and just a great guy. So y'all go check him out. We're going to give him a shout out on this episode. Also, look forward to seeing you guys again this weekend, June 20th, this coming Saturday, for a first live event at the Revive Outdoor Store in Trustville, Alabama. Like I mentioned, a bunch of past podcast guests, they're going to be there, live Q&A, free food, come hang out with us. It's going to be a great time. And really just excited to see you guys before we kind of get into the whole trade show season, because we have the World Deer Expo coming up in July, along with the Mobile Hunters Expo in August. So appreciate y'all watching. Well, appreciate y'all listening to the podcast. Hopefully I'll see this sometime in the coming week. And like we mentioned earlier, Monday's episode will not be on YouTube. Still underneath the ban strike through YouTube. So Monday's episode will come out sometime later next week. But thanks for listening to the show. We'll catch you back on the next episode from the Southern Outdoorsman. And remember, guys, y'all stay Southern.
All right, y'all go ahead and mark your calendars. Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. Is the Mobile Hunters Expo in Dalton, Georgia. Y'all have heard us talking about it for years, and it really is. It's the highlight of our summer. We absolutely love that show. We've met so many of you guys at that show over the years, and it is just it's like the perfect environment to go and meet like-minded hunters, hang out, have a good time, and get ready for deer season. So obviously, as the name implies, it is the place to go and try all of the mobile hunting gear coming out right now. We always recommend to people, if you're thinking about getting a new stand, a new sticks, a new saddle, go try it before you buy it. The Mobile Hunters Expo lets you try almost all the brands in the mobile hunting space in one spot in one day. There's really nothing like it. So not only do you have all that gear available to you, they also have a great speaker lineup. This year they've got Bobby Worthington, Dylan Harper, Mariah Boggess, Derek Norwood, and BHA all giving presentations where you can go learn from those guys and ask them questions. So if you've heard us talk about the Mobile Hunters Expo for a couple years now and haven't made it out yet, don't let this be another year that you miss it. Y'all come on out. We'll have a great time. We're excited to meet you guys there. We can't wait for it. We'll see y'all there. Again, mark y'all's calendars. It's at the Dalton Convention Center in Dalton, Georgia, Friday, August 14th through Sunday, August 16th. See y'all there. All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes, or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.